Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Sports Podcast award-winning 147 Snooker Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the former world champion and Triple Crown winner, the magician, Sean Murphy.
Certainly is, and we're not face-to-face this time, Sean, are we?
No, we're not, and I, do you know what? My life is all the poorer for it. I know I give you a lot of stick, Phil, but... I do enjoy it when we get a chance to record these together face-to-face.
It's funny, actually. It struck me today. I'm in Cambridge tonight. You are in Leicester because you've been commentating on the Championship League. What we should have done is meet not quite halfway, but we could have met at Joe Perry's Pleasure Palace, whatever it's called, and recorded it live together there, couldn't we?
I just can't get past the words Joe Perry's Palace. That I can't get past it. I've got all sorts. Joe, I don't know if Joe listens, but Joe, if you are listening, I'm sorry, mate. I'm sorry. I'm not in control of what Phil says.
I don't think it is actually Pleasure Palace, but I do want to go and amend the sign. Sorry, while we're recording, by the way, we're recording this on Wednesday evening. If Neil Robertson listens to the podcast at all, I don't know if he does or not. Leeds have just gone 1-0 up on Chelsea in the FA Cup. I'm taking it while it's there, because let's be honest, it won't end like that. Okay, so I'm taking the win while it's there. Marvellous. So how are you then?
I'm good, actually. Yeah, I've had a run of quite busy days, so I'm flagging a little bit. I've hurt my back, actually. I actually hurt it earlier on the train. I just felt it pop a little bit, so I'm a bit sore. But you know, I'm okay. I've been commentating today. I've been enjoying that with Messrs. Yates and Hendon, and that's been really, really good. Stephen Holworth was doing it a little bit as well, but we didn't do any together. Great to get some time with Dave and Phil. You know, two great commentators, and really, really enjoyed it actually. And I've got another day tomorrow, and of course, the actual reason I was here was because we were doing some green screen filming for some promo for the Saudi event next week, which, of course, Matchroom and World Snooker are heavily involved with. So we just sort of killed two birds with one stone, really, and threw a bit of commentary in whilst we were here too.
Fantastic. Yeah, Yatesy and Dave, the voices of snooker, let's be honest, they're both fantastic at what they do. And away from all that, they're both great guys, aren't they? They're just both fun to be around. And a real pleasure.
Yeah, they are. And yeah, really good. What have you been up to? What have you been up to since we were last together?
Can I just check? You had the Rocket there today as well.
The Rocket was there today. Yes, that was I was surprised by that.
Yeah, well, unexpected. I mean, he'd said he wasn't going to play in many events. He'd sort of listed ones that he would do. And Yeah, turn up Championship League. So getting the arm going before Saudi next week, I guess. What have I been up to? I've been working. Been working hard. Yeah, been a bit all over the place, to be honest, which is good. But, yeah, just busy, busy. Had a few days off for my little girl's fifth birthday, which was yesterday. That was nice. And, yeah, it was all good. She got a piano, Sean.
That's very sweet.
So we're waiting.
I did see the...
We're waiting for you to come around and give us some lessons now. That's what we need. We need the magician to come around and teach her how to play piano, which would be good.
I think the only thing I'm capable of teaching her is what sweets to eat while she's having a piano lesson. I think that's about as far as my knowledge I can go with that.
You can join my club in that one. So there you go. We'll see how she gets on. But yeah, it's been quite good. But it's busy, busy from here. Just feedback on the last podcast. Thank you for all those people that got in touch and said they enjoyed it. We did too. We actually got one listener who's got a question later on in this podcast. Actually sent us a picture because it was a two chandelier podcast where we're recording in Llandudno. And she's got two chandeliers in her living room. So she sent us a picture saying she's a two chandelier listener. To go along with our two chandelier podcast, which is a bit weird, but there you go. Anyway, yeah, so today this podcast is going to be very listener question heavy. We've got a load of questions to get through. We want to crash through as many of those as we can. Before we do that, let's just talk about snooker in the last couple of weeks. The last time we spoke, we were in Llandudno at the Welsh Open, Sean, and there were some surprises there, wasn't there?
There was a number of the big names went out early. There was a number of surprises, number of shock results. It was nice to see a bit of a return to form for the world champion, Luca Brissell. He carved his way through the draw. It was a good week. I didn't, from my own perspective, I just had a terrible, terrible match against Barry Pinches. Neither of us were great. It was a real struggle out there, and it went all the way down to pretty much the last ball. Not a great match. And of course, I then stayed on for 5 days working with BBC Wales, which I loved and enjoyed so much. The team there are fantastic. So that was great. Got to see you as well. We got to do the podcast, which was good fun.
Always.
And of course, any time in Llandudno is nice.
Yeah, beautiful place.
It was nice. It was just difficult for me on the table. I'm just really struggling at the moment with my game for some reason. I wish I knew why. I wish I could put my finger on it, but I'm just going through one of those rough spots that we all go through from time to time, and hopefully it'll turn. I mean, hopefully it'll turn soon.
Of course it will. It always does. It always does.
We'll keep pushing on.
The Canary is a player, if your game is in that kind of shape, you don't want to meet in the first round, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's not someone you want to play first round if your game's not in the best shape, because he will punish you for it. Tour pro.
I just want to make the point as well, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying it. He did make it public knowledge, so I don't think I'm talking out of school, but I only ended up playing Barry because my original opponent, David Grace, withdrew. And he withdrew because his mother had passed away. And I think we both, from everyone here at the podcast, Dave, if you listen, I'm not sure whether David listens or not. I did send him a message and of condolence, but Dave, from all of us here at the podcast, you've our condolences and you're very much in our thoughts, and a real tough one, that.
Yeah, just to echo that as well, one of the nicest guys in snooker is David Grace, and I think we said on the last podcast that he'd pulled out, and he wouldn't pull out for no reason, because he is, if you cut him, you bleed snooker. And it then sort of materialised that actually his mother had passed, and yeah, so sincere condolences, Dave, hope you're okay, and yeah, it's a tough one, is that? And we send you our best wishes, is sort of all we can say, really. So, the Welsh Open then, semi-finalists, Elliot Slesser in the semi-finals, and John Higgins went out in the semi-finals again, but Elliot Slesser showing sort of where his game is going and could go, I think, as well.
Yeah, he's a recent convert to the Chris Henry method, and he's been working with Chris a little bit, and you can see some of those things coming out in his game. You can see a bit of the patience and a bit of the calmness. And, of course, they made a bit of a thing of it in the coverage, didn't they, during the Welsh Open, that he actually had a little note with him out in the arena with some words of, encouragement and things to remember, little tips. And that's one of Chris's things. I've never seen anyone out in the arena with a list, a physical list of things to run through. But, you know, fair play to him for having the courage to do it, because, you know, once you make something like that public, you know, you can't take a list out into the arena with you. You can't take it out on a piece of notepaper and then ask for privacy. You've made it public. So, but I think you can see the small green shoots of improvement coming through. And I actually said it today on the coverage from Championship League in a match I was that Elliot was playing in. He's got all the shots, as Elliot.
Yep.
And it's only ever been a case of maybe those 6 inches between his ears might have been his own worst enemy over the years. And if he could fix that, if he could be a bit calmer, keep hold of his composure a bit better, he could be a very dangerous player.
Did you see that the director actually focused in on the bit of paper that he had while it was sat on the table? Did you see that? That's harsh, that, isn't it? I mean, that's really...
Yeah, that was naughty.
Yeah, it actually said on
that
it...
That was naughty.
The cat sat on the mat. Apparently, next week he's going to move on to four-letter words, is Elliot. But no, fair play to him.
We were debating in the studio. We were debating in the BBC Wales studio whether it was a shopping list or what, you know, what it might have been. But no, I think he had the word calm written down on it.
Doesn't surprise me. There's no shock there, is there? Let's be honest.
It's not a complete shock.
No, it's not.
If it was a shopping list, there was no hair gel on there.
No, certainly not. No hair gel, no hair mousse, no shampoo, none of that stuff. Just a bit of Mr. Sheen. That's. So the final was Gary Wilson, the two-time Scottish Open champion, against Martin O'Donnell. Now, Martin O'Donnell, to the non-snooker fans out there, you won't know who Martin O'Donnell is. The MOD is a cracking fella. I tried. He doesn't often go late in tournaments, so he's not so used to being interviewed. He is a nice guy, but he tends to clam up a bit. So I tried for World Snooker Tour to sort of show him off a little bit to let people see what he's actually like. We did an interview around the table, which I thought came across quite well. I thought he sort of shone in that. The final wasn't a classic, though, was it? Gary sort of took control and led the way. I thought Martin, a little bit rabbit in the headlights in his in the final, to be honest.
Yeah, and completely understandably so.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, you know, it's his first final of any kind, of any note. Here's a player who was off the tour not that long ago, and now he's in the final of a big event. Yeah, absolutely understandable that he would be nervous and be caught up in the moment of it. But he will have learned a lot about himself, and he'll have learned a lot about himself in the previous match. I actually thought the way he came through the semi against Slesser from 5-each with a century in the decider was extremely encouraging if you're a team MOD.
Oh, that was immense. Absolutely. I mean, he watched Elliot in the previous frame as well, knocking a 90-odd break, and he had to just sit there and watch him knock that in. And then he came out in the final one, I think it was a 1-2-6 from memory, to take the match, which... Oh, phenomenal. I mean, the bottle needed there to get out your seat where you've been sat for the last quarter of an hour and knocking a break of that magnitude is absolutely massive. So I think he's sort of shown he does belong at that level. You know, and like you said, he was off the tour not long ago at all. Last season he was off the tour, got back on, I think, through Q Tour. And yeah, I think he's sort of shown where he belongs, really, and that actually he's got a word in any argument in the sport now. So I think we could see more of Martin O'Donnell. I think we'll see more of Elliot Slesser as well. But hats off to Gary Wilson. That Scottish Open win 2 years ago sort of came from nowhere. Then he didn't do a lot in between that and this season's Scottish Open. He went and won the Scottish Open, and now he's gone and won in Wales as well. He's now a three-time ranking event winner, which there's not that many of.
No, he's actually now in quite, you know, good company. But I think it's those little points, isn't it? The markers along a player's journey. You know, he won the Scottish Open a couple of years ago. Then he did nothing, fell off the face of the earth, really, for a season. Then he popped up and defended it last December, just before Christmas. And then you're thinking, right, well, there was 12 months, really, between point A and point B. How long will it take him before he has another, you know, moment of success? Well, it was a matter of weeks.
Yep.
And that tells you that this is a player who's understanding how to do it now. He's understanding how to deal with those emotions, how to deal with that expectation. And by the way, he's getting very good at it. starting to look the part, Gary Wilson, I think, when he's out there now. Yeah. Like, starts to look like he fancies the job.
It's really funny, you know. He narrowly missed out on a 147 in the first frame. Narrowly missed out. And I went through to the players' lounge, and Robin, his wife, his wife's lovely, by the way. She sat there, and I said, oh, I said, the highest break so far is a 146. I said, to take the high break prize, he's got to get a 147. And she goes, how much is that, Phil? I said, it's £5,000. She said, right, so when he comes in the mid-session, I can ask him where my £5,000 is. And I said, oh, that's a bit harsh. And while we're talking, he knocks in a 147 in the second frame. Absolutely incredible stuff. And she's like, there you go. There's my £5,000. Very nice indeed. So, yeah, Gary Wilson, once again, proving he does belong at that top table and doing very, very well. It's interesting when you look, a player like Gary, again, another one who went off the tour for a decent period of time, got himself back. The likes of Martin getting to a final and Gary now being a multiple ranking event winner, that's got to give players that do drop off the tour, you know, even more sort of hope and inspiration, really.
Absolutely, yeah, because you're daring to dream, aren't you? You know, you've got to go back to the drawing board and rethink things, and you know, you go again. And what did Rocky say? Or Mickey said in Rocky films, didn't he? He said, it's not about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Absolutely.
And life doesn't go in a straight line. I think about my own pro career. I was a player who ever turned pro in 98 at just 15. And, you know, a year later, I was booted off the tour. The rules were vastly different then. But, you know, you're on, then you're off, and then you spend another few seasons back on what was called the Challenge Tour, trying to cut your teeth, learn the game that you thought you already knew. Then you come back and you go again.
Yep, absolutely.
And Neil Robertson and I did exactly the same thing. We both turned pro in the same year, and we both got bumped off the tour in the first year. So, you know, it's not easy. You do have to keep going, and you have to change your game, change your attitude, and keep going. But talking about changing your game and, you know, keep pushing on, we swing forward from the Welsh into the Players' Championship. Mark Allen.
Oh, again. Again, Mark Allen. I mean, he's... there's so many stories this season, isn't there? There's so many stories this season. Obviously, Judd and Ronnie are probably the big stories. Zhang Ander is a big story this season. Mark Allen is a big story this season. You know, there's... how many people are going to be in the Champion of Champions this year? About four. Just start from the semis, why don't you?
Yeah, there is only four at the moment.
It's just very madness. Quick tournament. Yeah, it's absolute madness. But, the tour went straight on to Telford. I mean, literally, we finished in North Wales on the Sunday night, and they started in Telford on the Monday at the Players' Championship. And, yeah, you're right, Mark Allen against Zhang Ander in the final. He looks very, very good, doesn't he? He's got to do something at the Crucible this year, as Mark.
It's hard to believe that he's never been to the final at the World Championships, isn't it? I mean, this year he lost to Mark Selby in the semis. I think that was the only second time in his career he's been to the one table setup at the Crucible. Now that's very hard to believe, but it's true.
I don't think it is.
And yeah, it looks.
I disagree. I don't think it is hard to believe, because you look at his game before he's grown and changed it. And it was not a Crucible game for me. I think the changes that he's made, the fact that he's developed his safety game, he's got more patience, the fact that he's developed that, he is becoming a Crucible player. And I think the results have already borne that out. The results will continue to bear that out, I think, anyway. What do you think?
Well, let me just ask you this, because I was back in Dublin during that event. Obviously, it's an event that I was defending champion of, that I wasn't in to defend. I was, you know, very disappointed about that.
Yep.
And gutted not to be in it, gutted not to have the chance to defend it. And that, you know, sums up my last year, really. But back in Ireland, it was very hard to find. He couldn't really watch it.
Really?
In the Republic of Ireland. And I didn't get to see much of it. So did anybody, with Mark's new style that doesn't please everybody, not necessarily that easy on the eye, did anyone make the joke about would rather watch paint dry with our new tournament sponsors being a paint company. Did anyone make that joke?
You're so harsh. You are so, so harsh. Yeah, I think many people did, yeah. I think lots of people did, particularly in the final, to be honest, because it wasn't a classic, but, you know, he won it.
Is Johnston Paints' new marketing strap line going to be, I would rather watch Mark Allen play a frame of snooker than watch this paint dry?
Well, who knows? But you know what? I think Mark Allen's the one that will be laughing as he lifted the trophy aloft and then lost his cue. Or he didn't lose his cue, but the airline lost his cue on his way back to Northern Ireland. What is that all about?
Happens. It happens. Yeah, now these things go missing. I remember my cue. I came back from Bulgaria once. I think I'd won a PTC in Bulgaria, European Tour event. And I got back to Manchester and the baggage handler met me in baggage reclaim to tell me my cue was in Switzerland. They put it on the wrong plane.
Oh, that's handy. That's really handy. Just what you need. So you just got
to... Came back a few days later. No chocolates, nothing. I was devastated.
Absolutely gutted. Absolutely gutted. So there you go. So Gary Wilson wins in Wales. Mark Allen wins the Johnston Paints Players Championship. That series, of course, moves on to the Tour Championships in Manchester, which begins at the start of April. We've got the World Mixed Doubles over the weekend, the Saturday, Sunday, and then the Tour Championship from the Monday at Manchester Central. Now, there's been reports this week that ticket sales for that event in Manchester have gone very, very well. They've had to release some more tickets, which I'm guessing means they've reconfigured the arena to get more people in, which is brilliant. I'll be on the mic for that one, for the World Mixed Doubles and for the Tour Championship. Get there if you can. It's going to be great. So it's wst.tv/tickets for that. That will round off the Players Series, top 12 players in the world. And it's sure to be a cracker. But before that, once you get finished on Championship League, Sean, you are heading off to Saudi Arabia.
Head to Saudi Arabia this weekend on Saturday. We've got a big PR media day on Sunday planned. And then the tournament kicks off for real on the Monday. And I have to say, now that it's nearly here, I'm really looking forward to going. I must admit, I'm really looking forward to seeing that big yellow ball of fire in the sky. You know, that thing we call the sun.
Don't remember it. It's too long ago.
I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I'm in desperate need for some vitamin D, so I'm happy to be going just for that, if I'm honest.
And talking of a big yellow ball, there will, of course, be the big yellow ball, the big golden ball on the table, which we're led to believe will be, I think it's on the middle of the balk cushion during the game. And the second it's apparent that a 147 cannot be made, it will be removed. Otherwise, it stays on the table throughout. And it's an in-play ball, so you can snooker behind it, you can move it, whatever. During that attempt at a 147, and should you pot it afterwards, it's worth 20 points to make it a 167. Now, we've not heard, I don't think, what that's worth yet, which is the first thing Ronnie asked me when I interviewed him about it. But I've heard rumours it's going to be a hell of a lot of money.
Yes, I've heard rumours as well that it's going to be quite a large prize, but I haven't heard anything solid. It's going to be quite interesting what happens with that ball. You know, the stories have been thin on the ground about it. It's obviously going to be in the way for the break-off.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be in the middle of the balk cushion to start with. So you'll be reaching over it to some degree. What happens if it gets knocked in a pocket accidentally through play?
I don't know.
No one seems to know the answer to these questions. So I'm quite looking forward to getting out there and seeing. I'm thankful that I'm not on first. I think I play on day two in the evening, something like that, playing Judd Trump. And really looking forward to the game. But delighted not to have to go first, to be honest.
I can imagine.
Could be carnage to start with, but really looking forward to it, I have to say. And yeah, the 167 thing, your 147s are rare enough, but as Dave Hendon said on the Snooker Scene podcast last time out, I think, you know, it's very possible that the game's 200th 147 could actually be a 167 out in the desert. So you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But ultimately, you know, we're happy to be out spreading the word of snooker and trying to popularise the game around the world, and you know, looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Just to apologise ever so slightly for the poor quality of this podcast this week. Not content-wise. Obviously, you know, we're doing great. But the connections, we're both on hotel Wi-Fi. So there is the occasional dropout from Sean's end, sadly. But it's not too bad, hopefully. Yeah, so that's all available on Eurosport. You're right, yeah. That landmark 147 could come in the desert, couldn't it?
Could very much so, yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, will that have a little asterisk next to it, won't it, in the history books?
Was it will have to.
Was it a 147?
Yeah. I think Dave...
Is it a 147? Is it a 167?
Again, I think Dave made the point. It can't be a 167. It's a 147 asterisk, and the golden ball was possibly, which was worth 20 points in that event. That's all live on Eurosport, so you can watch all of that on there. Before then, I shall be heading over to the island of Ireland and heading down to Goffs in Kildare this weekend for the Mr. Vegas World Seniors 900 with Stephen Hendry, Jimmy White. I think Tony Knowles has been brought in to replace Tony Drago. They had to get a Tony, apparently, that's contractual. Fergal O'Brien, Ken Doherty, of course, and Dennis Taylor as well. I'm really looking forward to that. Everyone talks about Goffs. I've seen some pictures of them setting it up today. It looks brilliant. So I'm expecting and looking forward to an absolutely brilliant atmosphere over in Goffs this weekend. You can watch it all from 12 noon on Channel 5 this Saturday. Right. Sean, do you mind terribly if we don't bother with a rant this week?
Do you know what? I'm feeling quite zen.
There you go.
I'm happy to skip it.
So we won't bother with the rant then. What we will do, though, we're going to have a very, very short break, and then we'll be back with a whole load of listener questions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. Yes, please do. And all the questions that we've got for you right now from listeners have been sent in through those mediums. So they've all come through social media at 147pod. We asked for questions, you've delivered and sent us absolutely loads of them, so we'd like to put some real focus on them and get through as many as we can. So we'll begin with Steve Hasak on Instagram. Does Sean have any pre-game rituals, and also what is at the top of both of your bucket lists, careers and life? So pre-game rituals, Sean, what do you do?
I don't have any pre-game rituals. I never really allowed myself to go down that road of superstitions or doing it. You know, I didn't ever want to be tied to, oh, I must do that, or I've got to do that, otherwise, you know, everything's going to be unlucky. Never gone down that road.
Oh, fair
thankfully.
Enough.
You're working, do you have any pre-match rituals?
I just prepare. I just prepare methodically for absolutely everything. Preparation is key, isn't it? So no rituals as such. Always make sure my tie is straight. Because I'm about to go on live TV. So other than that, no, nothing weird like that. So bucket lists, do you have one?
I don't officially have one, no. Some places I'd like to go, I'd love to go to Japan. I'd love to go to Tokyo.
Okay.
You know, I've never been there. Been very close, but never made it that far. So I'd really like to go there. I'd like to go and see the Taj Mahal, and I'd like to see the pyramids. But the place I'd really like to go and see is a place called the Ooty Club in India.
Yes, where it all started.
Which is where snooker comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to go there.
The birthplace.
What about you?
Just to start off with, the pyramids. My mum went to see the pyramids. And she said to me, she said, really, really disappointing. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you stand there and you see the pyramids in front of you. But then you turn around and behind you, there's a McDonald's, there's a KFC and all these things which you never see in the pictures. And they're all literally just there. And she said it was just a bit of a, that's a bit disappointing, really. Wanted to see the pyramids, didn't think there was fast food.
That sounds fantastic.
It sounds ideal to me, but, you know, it wasn't her thing. I did ask whether there was a Greggs, but she didn't know. My bucket list. I'd love to go to either the Super Bowl or an NFL game in Denver, the Mile High Stadium in Denver. I'd love to do that. I'd love to do some ring announcing in boxing in the States, which is a bit weird because boxing promoters in the UK seem obsessed with having American ring announcers. So it'd be quite cool to have an American promoter that got a British ring announcer in. That's quite a rare beast. I'd like to do that. There's lots of places I'd like to go to, but I think they're probably the main ones. They're probably the ones that I'd, would be at the top of my list if I had one. So there you go. Moving on.
Very good. Katie Thompson on Facebook says, with snooker being such a quiet pin drop sport, do players think about what they eat the night before a game, mindful of whether it could give them wind when they'll be bending over the table the next day?
Now
this, guys, this is the content you want, isn't it? These are the questions that we should be asking in that BBC studio when the players come in after the game. This is what we should be asking.
Now, Katie is our two chandelier listener, by the way. She is the two chandelier listener. There is a famous story that I think Dennis Taylor tells about Bill Werbenick doing just that, bending over the table and letting rip.
Bill Werbenick, you know, famously used to drink, you know, a pint of beer per frame at the Crucible. And, you know, if a best of 19 went the distance, you know, he'd have 19 pints plus whatever he had before and after in the interval and stuff. So, you know, he's carrying the best part of 23, 24 pints in him. Something's going to come out, isn't it? And I think a couple of times it might have caught him short, and he might have let one rip out in the Crucible Theatre. You never know. Chemical warfare, they call it in the trade.
do you then? Do you think about it? Are you mindful of that or not?
No, absolutely not. The only thing I think about in terms of that is I don't like to eat too close to the time that I'm going to be playing because I don't ever like that feeling of being bloated in your suit. You know what it's like. You're wearing a three-piece suit when you're doing your presenting and you're working. You don't want to feel uncomfortable, much less then you've got to reach over and be bending over the table. So you don't want to feel uncomfortable, but you've got to eat close enough to the start time of your match so that you don't have a sugar low or an energy low. You've got to be on it. So, you know, yes, we're not marathon runners.
Oh, Sean has temporarily vanished on us and just dropped out.
We're not
here he
comes. To fuel our bodies for stuff like that. But you do have... Yeah, sorry, I don't know if that was you or me. My screen just went blank. I don't know where you lost me.
You keep freezing on us, but I get that. You're not marathon runners and you've got to make sure that you've got enough fuel to get you through. That's that's understandable. I think there is one player on the tour who is known for... making the odd smell out there, isn't there?
Is there?
Okay. We'll say no more on that then. Okay, moving on to the next question. Niall Greenfield. Oh, it's not you, by the way, Sean. I'm not insinuating that for a second.
I'm worried now.
Niall Greenfield on Facebook. Recently beat my highest break, now 38. That's his break, not his age. But struggled when needing to play with side. Is it really possible to get a 50 or 60 break without using side? And on a similar vein, Daniel Smith on Instagram messaged to say that Zhang Ander seems to play every single shot plain ball. So is the use of side overrated?
Well, to answer the first part of that question, a 50-60 break is absolutely possible, only using what we call plain ball. That's not using any side spin for the uninitiated. The problem is, it's a bit like when if an artist takes a load of colours and just, you know, puts them on his palette and you ask them to draw something really pretty, if they don't mix the colours, they can only go so far. So by using side spin, you're in effect mixing those colours together, allowing that creativity to run wild. Zhangander doesn't play, you know, the majority of his shots playing ball. That's just not correct. He wouldn't be able to get the cue ball around the table the way he does by only using the centre of the cue ball. He might not use as much side as other players. I use a lot of side spin, as do a lot of old school players my generation. But you know, you give yourself more. You can achieve more with the cue ball by using side spin, but you do make the game more difficult.
Okay, it's trying to get that balance then, I guess. So there you go. Hope that has answered your questions, Niall and Daniel.
Richard Jones from Facebook got in touch on our Facebook page. He says, what are your thoughts on building a second Crucible venue combined with a snooker museum open during the holidays like they have at Wimbledon? First point there, have you been to Wimbledon? Have you been to the museum there?
No. Have you?
It is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, okay.
And I think you can go every day of the week. You know, it's just there. And it is a wonderful facility. I would love some snooker to have something like that. I think how we've got this far down the track, you know, in 3 years' time, we'll be celebrating 50 years at the Crucible.
Yeah.
How we've made it this far without some kind of national centre of excellence, you know, a home, a museum, I've got absolutely no idea. The whole conversation about a new Crucible, you know, makes me go a bit funny because I'm scared stiff about this debate about moving from the Crucible. I don't want the game to leave. I don't want the World Championship to leave the Crucible. I'm just concerned that it might.
Something
I'm
has
really,
to happen.
Really worried about it.
I hate to say it, but something has to happen. I don't see, I'll probably get in trouble with loads of listeners for this, I don't see that it's viable to do another 50 years at the Crucible. Okay, the way all sport's going, the way snooker's grown, in if it's going to keep growing in stature and everything else, we talked about this on the last podcast, that the sport is growing, and in this last year it's grown in quite a big way and it's going to continue to. If that's to continue, the World Championships at the Crucible, as it currently is, isn't sustainable. Okay? It simply isn't. You can't do it. You can't have the showpiece event, the World Championships, in such a tiny venue with all the history it's got and everything else. Now, there's different options to this. There's move it away. There's move it around the world in different places each year. Or there is extend or build a new Crucible. And I think that's something Barry Hearn has asked for. He sort of said to Sheffield, look, you know, we need more. We don't want to move, but we need more. And there's talk of them building a second venue over the road from there, which could help with this and accommodate. Or there's talk of extending the Crucible. Personally, I'd love to see it kept in the Crucible, but I do think it needs to grow. I think it needs to get bigger, because what's going to happen is supply and demand, ticket prices are going to keep on going up, and it's going to price out your, I don't like the word normal when I'm talking about people, but your average snooker fan. They're going to be priced out of going to Crucible. I think that's already approaching. I think we're getting there now. It's very, very difficult to get Crucible tickets now. And I think if we stay in the Crucible as it is, the prices are going to keep going up because of supply and demand. That's totally understandable. You can't blame anyone for that. That's just how it is. And I think they've got to make it bigger however they can do that to allow more tickets to go on sale, to keep the prices sensible for those, inverted commas, normal people that want to go and watch it. That's how I see it anyway. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I tend to agree with pretty much everything you've just said. I think the the idea of, you have to put nostalgia and all of that to one side just for a moment. You have to take out of the equation the emotion and the love and passion we all have for the group. Just have to
okay,
park that for a second. You know, I watched the 40th anniversary celebration. I rewatched it. Did you drop? Did I drop out again?
Yeah, you're dropping out all over the place at the moment. Sure, I'll be completely honest. It's yeah, you're sort of pausing and freezing rather a lot. Do you know?
Oh goodness, it's a shame. It's a shame. We're going to be challenging Nick and Phil here, aren't we? In the worst connection stakes. Phil Haig often has poor connection.
He does. Well, he's us this
sorry
week.
Sorry about that, guys.
It's not that often. It does happen. But go on. You were saying, though, about the Crucible.
Yeah, I recently rewatched the 40th celebrations that were on BBC. But we can't go on having the game's biggest event in the game's smallest venue. Doesn't work.
No, I agree. I tend to agree with that, and it's very difficult. So, regarding your actual question, what's the thoughts on having a second Crucible venue? Yes, I think it something's got to happen, and I do think a snooker museum would be great. Whether it will be that well attended away from the world, I don't actually know. I'm not sure. What it could do, though, is draw more Chinese tourists into Sheffield, because we know how big snooker is in China. I live in York. We get a lot of Chinese tourists in York because of the history and everything else. It could draw Chinese tourists into Sheffield, which could sort of help to tip that with the council down there into doing something. Who knows? Something's got to happen.
What about a situation, you know, like in golf, you know, St. Andrews is the home of golf.
Yeah.
We all know that. But the Open Championship only goes there once every 5 years.
Yeah.
What about a situation where, because, I mean, I think our World Championship might be the only event of its kind that doesn't move.
Well, there's darts as well, isn't there? Darts is Ali Pally. So darts is very similar, yeah. Obviously run by similar people. And, yeah, there's an argument for it moving around, but would it be as well supported
and
go down
as... What happens if it went on the road? What happens if the World Championship... What happens if it went on the road and every 5 years it returned to the Crucible?
Great question. I think unless it's actually tried, we wouldn't know, would we? But would there be an outcry if it was tried? I don't know. I think there probably would. I think a lot of people had sort of tied to the Crucible. What I would say is that whole thing would vanish 2 years in. If it moved somewhere else or if it went on the road, 2 years after it moved, that whole sentiment of, oh, it should be in the Crucible would be gone. Okay, it just would, because yes, I'd like it to stay in Sheffield. I'd like it to stay at the Crucible. But I think something's got to change. Now, whether that is a new venue, whether that is taking it on the road, I don't know. And I think time will tell. So we shall see. Anyway, what are your thoughts? Let us know at 147pod. Should it stay as it is at the Crucible? Can it stay as it is at the Crucible? Or does it need to move on? And moving on, Darren Morgan, not that one, on X, formerly Twitter, what are your thoughts on tournament schedules where one half of the draw gets a rest before the final, the other half finish after midnight? Does it affect the players? Now, this was, at the weekend, this sort of came to the forefront, really, because I think Mark Allen had Saturday off. ITV events, they do not play on a Saturday afternoon. So you have one semi-final on the Friday night, the other on the Saturday night. So Mark had the Saturday off. Zhang played, I think, till about midnight or gone midnight on Saturday night, and then played the final on the Sunday. What's your thoughts then, Sean? Does it affect the players?
I mean, it has to be an advantage to the player who finishes first. There has to be. But, you know, it'd be interesting to look at the stats and see how often that converts into a win. What's the win ratio in finals of the player who wins the first semi or is finished earlier and has a night off or a day's rest? I mean, there has to be something in it. And you think back to the Crucible, I mean, you know, go back to the World Championships, there's that horrible match, isn't there? There's that one session in the quarters where they have to play back-to-back sessions. They play the middle session and then the the final session of the quarterfinal, you know, on the spin. And then from then on, you're playing every day. It's a real slog. Now, that slogfest, that being out there on your feet and you can't do it anymore, you're absolutely knackered.
Oh, Sean's breaking up on us again there. that was getting quite interesting as well, I thought.
That is part of the question. There is a definite advantage.
So there is a definite advantage. Sorry, Sean, you dropped out on us again. There is, yeah, definitely. Is there an argument to be made that the player that plays and wins on the Saturday night has momentum moving forward because they've won, they're sort of still in that zone, or does the sleep kind of break that up?
Yeah, well, it's one of those as well because you know, Zhang Anda didn't finish the match and go straight to bed.
Yeah, true.
He'd have had to do all his media, all his PR, all his little clips for ITV, all his little pre-match, all the stings, all the buzz, all of that stuff, all the VTs, all the interviews, all the press. You know, you finish the match at whatever time. You know, it's a good 2 hours before you leave the venue.
Yeah.
Then you probably want to eat. Then you've got to sort tickets. Then you've got to do this, do that. You know, it's another hour before you're in bed. You're buzzing. You're excited. Meanwhile, your opponent's tucked up in bed.
And if you don't finish
it
till
has
midnight,
to make a difference.
Yeah, if you don't finish till midnight, you're looking at 2-3 o'clock minimum, aren't you, for getting to bed? Oh, I think Sean's vanished on us again. So I'll say yes, you are looking at 2 or 3 o'clock minimum for going to bed. Sean, are you there?
Yeah, it's really tiring.
It is, yeah, I can imagine. So anyway,
it's really tiring.
Yes, it does. However, that's the schedule. That's just how it is. I don't really see any way that can change, to be honest, unless we have two tables in play for a semi-final and we play them alongside each other, which I don't think that works. I think semi-finals deserve that focus of being on one table, which for me, that's what it deserves. So I can't see that changing anytime soon. Sean?
CMS Snooker TV on X. What are your thoughts on marketing the Championship League in a far better way and making it like the Premier League darts, where it's more of a tour across the country slash Europe? As it is, engage the fans on the whole, and they're not even allowed in to watch.
Okay.
It is weird how there's no fans, isn't it? That is weird.
It is, but the non-ranking event version of Championship League is paid practice, isn't it? I mean, it's there effectively for gambling, so people have something to bet on. And it gives players a chance to earn a few quid and get their arm going. As we saw Ronnie playing in Championship League today, you know, it's good practice ahead of Saudi for him. We've talked about this before. I think there should be Premier League snooker. I think that should be brought back. It's just how you would fit it into the schedule, because the schedule is so crazily packed that to get one night each week for so many weeks is now an impossible to do. So I don't really see how it can. I don't think Championship League is the answer, if I'm honest. But what is the answer? I'll be honest, I don't know either. We have temporarily lost Sean, although he is trying to call back in, I believe, right now. So, I don't think that is the answer. I think Championship League is Championship League. It's just sort of what it is. But I think Premier League needs to come back. I think there's a space for it. I think it would be exciting. I think if you do it in the form of almost a shootout style or shootout-esque format, I think Premier League could work. It's just where you fit it into the schedule, isn't it, Sean? You're back.
I'm back.
You are. Happy days. So, yeah, I kept talking while you weren't here. So, Premier League would be great to be back, wouldn't it? And it'd be good profile and publicity for the sport, but it's where you fit it in, isn't it?
Cool. It's a very busy show, isn't it? Of course, the venue is broadcasters. You know, it's everything. It's everything all rolled into one. It's very, very hard. It's very, very difficult to know where to fit it in. I'm really enjoying the irony here. My laptop's now telling me I have a poor connection. I know I have a poor connection.
You do have a poor connection because you are breaking up horrifically badly, it is fair to say. So, yeah, you definitely do have a poor connection. In fact, I may try and find another way that I can get you onto here that just may work. So let me see if something else could work. I'm going to try something a little bit clever that I don't think I've ever tried before. But I'm going to try something else. If it will work, we shall see. Anyway, while we do that, we move on. And I shall ask a question. Just let me do this and see if that works. What shall I ask? Right. Mariners Talkie on X. Will Sean be taking the extra two Qs to Saudi, given the temperatures it's going to be for this event, and more importantly, the one in August, where it's forecasted to be 110 degree heat? Sean, I am trying to call you in a different format. Let's see if this works.
Hello.
Yes, there he is. Okay, let me turn the other one down. And Sean, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, it's not great, but I can hear you.
Okay,
so we'll knock the other one on the head and try it this way. So the Mariners in Torquay have asked, will you be taking, bearing in mind the weather conditions and everything else, the additional two Qs over to Saudi?
Yeah, I've no intention of taking them, no. I've got my one Q with me, and that's the one that's going to go. And, you know, I think I just want, you know, it's an experiment to see how it goes out there. Do you know, looking back, I may well have lost myself a little bit this season with the experiments with multiple Qs. Because, I mean, I haven't really pushed on with it. I only tried one of my other two Qs once for two frames and hardly got a shot. Chris Wakelin dispatched me easily with it. So I think it'd be tough to call it a success. And maybe that's, you know, led to taking a bit of focus away from the rest of the team. I don't know, but I don't know if the multiple Q thing has been a bit of a misnomer this year. I'm not really sure. Maybe all the people who told me I was crazy for doing it were right. You know, when you look back, maybe they were all right. I don't know.
Well, time will tell. But so are you going to take them to Saudi or not? No?
No, I've got one Q with me, and that's the one that will be coming with me.
There you go. Okay, then. There you go, Mariners Talkie. That's the answer to your question. Matt, 3789 on Instagram. For Sean, who are your top five best friends on tour? That's a proper teenager question, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah, goodness me. Well, I mean, you know, the vast majority of us all get on really, really well. Best friends on tour? Yeah, very, very difficult to say. Goodness. Well, I'd have to say you, won't I? I mean, it doesn't say playing.
Oh, I'd hope
there's
so,
people
yeah.
on the tour. I'd have to say you.
Contractually, you've got to say me, yeah.
Contractually, I have to say you. I'd have to say Matt Selt.
Yep.
He and I are really good mates. Mark Allen, he and I are really good mates. Mark Selby are really good. I am friends with other people as well, not called Mark. you know, just for the record, or people whose names don't begin with N. And Ali Carter and I, you know, we go back a really long time. We've always been good friends. And we've had a lot of good laughs along the way. So, yeah, that's five there. You know, they've got some really good relationships on the tour. Of course, in a lot of cases, you've been with these people a long time, you know. Of course, a lot of us go back to being kids together. So, there's been a lot of strong relationships built over the years. And I've never listed them before, but if I had to, that would probably be my top five.
Yeah, there you go. So there are Sean's top five. Sean, can you still see the listener questions or not now you're on your phone normally?
Yeah, I've got them in front of me here. So I've got Sean Smith. Sean spelled with a W, interestingly. You don't get many of those to the pound these days. Sean Smith with a W says, would you rather win, I think this is for me, says, would you rather win the world again or five regular bracket non-Triple Crown events? Also, how does Sean feel about Google claiming he's 5 foot... 11.
Well, he is. If you squashed a quiff, he's about 4'6". So go on that. That's a good question, that, because obviously the Judd Trump thing comes up a lot. Judd's won however many ranking titles he's won now, and people criticise him for not winning what they consider the big ones, the Triple Crown events, as they're now called. So would you rather win the Worlds again or five non-Triple Crown events?
Well, I mean, the criticism that Judd Trump takes is just a ridiculousness. It's one of those things that come with social media that, you know, everyone's got an opinion. You know, it's most of them are based on absolutely nothing.
Which is ridiculous. Let's be honest. Judd Trump is one of the greatest players ever to have played the sport of snooker. And it's a sport, not a game. It is a sport. Someone criticised for that the other week. It's a sport. Get over it. It's ridiculous. He's one of the greatest players ever to play the sport of snooker. The fact that someone in their armchair can say, oh yeah, but has he won enough Triple Crown events? Give up. Absolutely give up.
It's bonkers. I mean, if you asked me, if I got to choose, I'd choose another world title over five, you know, regular tour events. So, you know, but that's my choice. I'm pretty sure everyone would choose that, to be honest. I'm sure most people would choose to win at the Crucible against, you know, anywhere else. You know, it's just so special. But I don't think Judd criticised, put it this way, I don't think he gets criticised by anyone who's actually been out there and had a go at it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these criticisms are from people who, well, they've never played, certainly never played professionally. Perhaps at anything, let alone snooker. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think the whole thing's a bit of nonsense.
So let's go on to the more serious question there. How do you feel about Googling you 5'11"?
Yeah, that's news to me. I didn't know that. I'll tell you what I do know. I think I've talked about this before, not necessarily whether it's sure on this podcast or not, but my Wikipedia page, I went on that once and tried to alter a load of things on it that were just wrong. Bearing in mind it's about me. But of course, I didn't set it up originally. So whoever did, I don't know, you know, whoever's out there who actually created a page, whenever I have edited something on there, they then re-edit it back because they get final say on a page that's about me. I mean, it is absolutely bonkers.
So
for the record, just to clear this up, I am 6'1".
You're 6'1", same as me. There you go. I've got to say, we are about the same height. We're still next to each other. I do think that. Just for anyone who is a Wikipedia editor out there, go on. What's the most outlandish thing you can put on Sean's Wikipedia page? I don't have one, thankfully, because I'm not important like that. But go on there. Get it edited. Let's put some things on there. What can we put on Sean's Wikipedia page that we'll check it before the next podcast and see what comes up? Moving on, Robert Beamish on Facebook. This is Bob Beamish. This is the man that asked us what the best crisps are last time. Getting on to the serious business now. Read the crisp question on the last podcast. How did you both overlook Seabrook's cheese and onion? Robert, I'll tell you why. Because cheese and onion's horrible. And Seabrook's, they're just too greasy. For me, Sean?
Well, I like a cheese and onion. I've got to be honest. I'm not sure I've ever had the Seabrook's particular ones. But yeah, I mean, listen, you know, Robert, I know you're saying, how could we possibly overlook the cheese and onion? I know for a fact that I'm right by saying it's the pickled onion monster munch. They are the superior crisp by some distance. And let me tell you this.
Go on.
Seymour.
Oh, sorry, you said, let me tell you this, then you vanished then. So say that again, let me tell you this what?
You agree.
Well, I did have some pickled onion monster munch in Aberdeen last week. I was in Aberdeen for a day last week, and I had some pickled onion. I sent you a picture of my pickled onion monster munch. They're still no Brannigans. They're still not as good as Brannigans. Seabrook's are a northern crisp. I think they're sort of Bridling to it. I don't know. I did have an uncle, my mum's brother-in-law, who lived down North London, and whenever they used to come to visit, he used to buy boxes of Seabrook crisps to take back down with him because he was obsessed that they were the best crisps. And he'd literally, every time he came up, he'd buy a box or two of Seabrook's crisps and he'd take them back down south with him. So there is something in this. Seabrook's are great crisps. Personally, I just think they're a little bit too oily. And they're no Brannigans, and I'm sure Sean would say they are no pickled onion monster munch. So there you go, Robert Beamish. I hope that answers your question. Next up, Sean.
Me James, Instagram. Congratulations on the award. Well So thank you very much, Jamie.
Did we mention we won an award? I'll tell you what.
This was the award. The award, yes. We didn't win an award for connection and connectivity this week.
I was just going to say, given our technical issues this week, we won't be winning any more. But thank you very much, Amy. That's very kind.
Two questions. Why do the winner and runner-up always get medals? Why can't the runner-up get a miniature version of the trophy as Ali Carter looked chuffed with his in Wuhan? Also, why is snooker merchandise so bad? Even Cliff Richard, there's a blast from the past,
wow,
produces his calendar each year, but the tour can't even manage that. Maybe now it's an award-winning podcast. There could be a range of 1 or 7 podcast merchandise. Well, we did do our mugs. Dedicated followers will remember the mug.
Yeah.
Do you remember the mug?
Yeah, there's about 3 people that have got those mugs out there in podcast land somewhere. On the merchandise thing, this week, funnily enough, Amy, that you've sent this in, I don't know if you're the marketing manager for Castor or what, but World Snooks have announced a new technical clothing partnership with Castor, the sportswear manufacturer. Their stuff's very sort of very fashionable. It's very smart. It's very nice. I think they're producing the clothing for this event in Saudi, and I think the World Mixed Doubles as well. So it won't look like the people competing are in Star Trek like it did last year. So hopefully that's sort of the start of things to come. I know Tom Rowell, the new one of the new guys at World Snooker Tour, he's quite hot on this kind of thing. He's come from the world of football, probably hence the Castor link, I'd have thought. And yeah, I think they're going to turn this around. You're right, snooker merchandise is terrible. I mean, it's, you know, some of it's just embarrassingly bad. There's some decent stuff, but some of it's just awful, and it does need to be better. So hopefully the Castor link will change that. 147 Snooker Podcast merchandise. I'll give that one a bit of a swerve for now. Miniature version of the trophy then, Sean. Obviously, you've had your fair share of medals. Where do they end up?
My kids have got all the medals that, you know, I've won whilst they've been on the planet. They love them, and Harry and Molly went through a phase of playing for them. You know, they would compete against each other for this medal. So they've had their fill of them. To be honest with you, I mean, runners-up medals, I don't know many players who keep them, if I'm completely honest. I think they usually find their way into, you know, the hands of a child or a kid at the venue or
yeah,
a loved one or whatever they might be. I think a couple have been thrown away. You know, players don't want reminders of runners-up and losses. So miniature trophies would be out, I think. I don't think anyone's got any interest in that. I've got no interest in runners-up medals or anything that doesn't say winner on it, frankly.
Yep.
Don't play for second. So I don't think anyone would be bothered.
No, absolutely. I remember I interviewed a footballer, a proper top-level footballer as well, quite a few years ago. And I asked him about medals and different things. And he said to me, he said, it's really funny, he said, because my dad's kept everything. You know, I've just sort of given everything to my dad, apart from the stuff I wanted to keep in my house. So all his winner's medals were on display in his house. All the shirts he wore in certain finals were on display in his house. The shirts he got from other players who were legends of the sport he played against were all framed in his house. And he mentioned this to his dad once, and his dad opened a drawer in his house and he had every single runner-up medal his son had ever won in this drawer. And he'd kept every single one, his dad, because his dad saw that as, you know, there's not many people whose sons have played in these finals, and he had. But he himself could not give a monkey's about those runner-up medals. If it wasn't a winner medal, he wasn't interested. Now, I've seen a few players literally get the medal, give it to a kid in the crowd straight away. There was one in Clandidno, John Higgins did it, and I happened to capture it on film. And the young man that he gave it to in the crowd, I've kept in touch with him and his family through social media. He now represents Scotland at pool. So he sort of, I think, was inspired by that and focused on his Q sports. He plays snooker. He plays pool to a very, very good level. So, you know, you never know what that can inspire. That runner-up medal could inspire a youngster to play the game, focus on the game, and work hard at the game. You never, ever know. So, but yeah, miniature trophies, I'd like to see that. I think that's a good thing. So there you go. Right, one more question, and then we'll do our pointless question, then we've finished. So Jamie Furness on Instagram, love the pod, always a great way to get your question asked on the podcast. Does Sean ever see his YouTube channel becoming active again? It's always great insight from one of the game's top players. So go on then, Sean. You've got your YouTube channel. It's sort of dormant at the moment. You've talked about it before. Could it come back?
Yeah, I mean, it could always come back. It's just one of those things, isn't it? I mean, you see Stephen Hendry with his Q-Tips channel. If we move into the realms of golf, you know, our good friends with Rick Shields and Matt Fryer and Peter Finch, you know, who are all very, very big and popular in that world. That's their main driving force in their careers. And of course, they've got all the infrastructure and the network and the time and all of those other things to devote to it, which I simply don't have. And I wouldn't want to do it half-baked, you know. I wouldn't want to do it if my heart wasn't really in it. And I simply don't have time to commit to it. If that were my only job, if I were a YouTuber and that was how I earned my money, then I'd be doing it because I was the first snooker player to have a YouTube channel. And in its early days, it was good and it was well received, and I really enjoyed doing it. But I just don't have the time at the moment. Whilst, you know, with my other commitments as a touring professional, as a father, you know, as a board member, as a director, as a all these other things, I don't have time to run a very high driven content filled YouTube channel. At the moment, I think Stevens is doing really well. I think the Q-Tips channel is great.
I think it's brilliant. By the way, I think the Q-Tips YouTube channel is superb. For me, that's a bit of a stumbling block to yours as well, because that's the yardstick. That's what everything else will be measured by, and I think he's nailed that, to be honest. I think it's really, really good.
Absolutely. But of course, you know, and I don't want to burst anyone's bubble here, but, you know, it's not Stephen Hendry doing it off his own back.
No,
he's
got
a full production team who film it and edit it. And, you know, he wouldn't know his way around an SD card. You know, he wouldn't know how, you know, GarageBand works or, you know, anything on his... He doesn't know how to edit a video. You know, he fronts them, and he fronts them very well.
Yeah.
But he does have the support network of a full production team who puts these things together for him. He isn't sat there at home editing videos late into the night and uploading them at three in the morning, like Rick Shields did in the early days, like Matt Fryer and Peter Finch did in the very early days. They now all have teams of editors and producers. But back in the early days, they were doing it just themselves. And I think to some degree, that's why those channels have boomed, because people love the fact that it was, you know, that it was their genesis moment. You know, once upon a time, it was just then. But, you know, listen, if I had a team of editors and a team of producers and camera operatives to do it for me too, you know, I'd be having a good crack at it as well. I enjoyed it. It is just a time thing for me.
Might it be something you come back to? Sort of,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah. 100%,
when you do finish playing, is that something you could sort of get back into, do you think?
Well, it'd be good if I did it, because all my demos work, hardly any of Stephen's work. I can still make a few breaks, you know. You know, so, you know, the content would be better. Now, I don't have 7 world championships in the locker, but I know, in all seriousness, I really like Stephen's content. I've been on his channel a couple of times. And I think that whole world that's become the way we consume things these days, hasn't it? That's the whole marketing world of that, you know, TV and broadcast has changed significantly in such a short space of time. Yeah, no, I love it. I think it's done really, really well.
It's all changed. There you go. They were the listeners' questions. If you've got a question for either of us on absolutely anything, as you can see there, we've answered questions from crisps to bucket lists to YouTube to actual snooker questions as well. Get in touch at 147pod across all forms of social media. Message us. Our direct messages are open. Message us your questions. We'll try and get them on a future podcast. Only thing left to do, though, Sean, is our pointless question, which we do every single podcast. This one has been sent in by Judylicious, our friend Judy, over in Germany. She's an exiled Scot living in Germany. She has asked us the question, pineapple on a pizza... yes or no?
Well, I mean, this is one of the easier ones, isn't it? I mean, because it's a straight yes.
Oh, no. How did I know we disagree on this? No, it's disgusting. Absolutely despicable behaviour. How could anyone consider putting pineapple on a pizza? That's just vile. I mean, there's few things I could think of that are worse, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, if I'd grown up in the middle class like you, maybe I wouldn't have liked it either.
No, it's vile.
Well, I can assure you of this. Let me tell you this as somebody who lived through it. The Hawaiian pizza, as it's better known, is an absolute staple meal.
No, grim.
You know, from where I come from.
Once again, proving that Sean Murphy has absolutely zero taste whatsoever. So what do you think? I'm a straight, flat, definite no to pineapple on pizza. Sean is putting it on every pizza he ever makes. Let us know at 147pod. Pineapple on a pizza, yes or no? Sean, safe travels over to... Well, enjoy your last day of commentary on Championship League tomorrow. Safe travels over to Saudi. Hope you get the arm going and play well over there.
Thank you very much. Listen, I can only hope that I play better than this Wi-Fi connection has been. As soon as we end this, I'm going to have to put another 50p in the meter. Because this has been an absolute outrage.
Well, look, apologies to everyone for the quality of the connection. We hope you've managed to sort of hear most of it. Anyway, I'll be on Channel 5 on Saturday at the Mr. Vegas Snooker Seniors 900 over in Goffs in Kildare in Ireland. Sean will be in Saudi next week on Eurosport. Hope you can all catch that. But for now, it's a very goodbye from me. That's not even funny, Sean, is it? I said it's a goodbye from me, Sean. We should take that as a...
I've got to go, I'm losing you. I've got to go, I'm losing you. Bye.
Bye, Sean. See you again soon. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.